make an offering, a mandala offering to start, right? This is like offering everything in the universe to all the enlightened, and to our teachers, to everyone in the universe as well. Why not? And then we take refuge. That's what makes us Buddhists, right? Take refuge in the Buddha, in his teachings, the Dharma, and in some sort of differentiate this particular spiritual practice.
Okay. That is our motivation for participating tonight in meditation, teachings, discussion. Just thinking like that. And I think it would just be really excellent to start with a meditation. How do you think about that? Because I could start with a good intention to slow down. That's where we begin. taking our meditation seat, which ensures that our back is straight. We come into this body in this moment and attend to the spine and see it gently lift toward the sky like a flower reaching for the sun. And then we allow all of our muscles to relax around it, bringing our awareness to the crown of our head. And then very gradually floating down, releasing and softening all the muscles in the face, particularly behind the eyes. Attend to the feeling when you actually purposely release the tension in your face, your jaw. Notice a sense of relaxation. And floating down into your neck and across your shoulders. All the way down your arms. To the tips of your fingers. Float down your torso. Your shoulder blades and the small of your back coming to your sit bones. Let your belly be soft to receive the full breath. Soles of your feet and the tips of your toes. Your whole body totally relaxed, at ease. Feel the places where your body touches the cushion. Experience a sense of stability. Completely safe. Well held in the arms of Mother Earth. Begin to rise up through your body. Notice how your spine and connect to the energy of the heavens, this vast, limitless potential. Then allow earth energy to rise and heaven energy to descend, and let them come to your heart center, meeting there and taking the aspect of a small sphere of warm light, whose nature is love. As you inhale this present moment, allow that energy to grow. And as you exhale, let it begin to fill your body with this warm, loving light. Fills your body, it becomes uncontainable. And you breathe in this present moment, and as you exhale, this loving kindness, well-wishing, fills the room. Breathing in the present moment and breathing out loving kindness. Filling the whole country. Continuing to expand out, touching the whole world. All beings, rich and poor, without discrimination, those who are kind, those who give harm, let this loving kindness to continue to expand out into the universe. As far as your imagination will go, to the infinitude of space. Leaving no being untouched. By your loving kindness, your well-wishing. begin to contract the energy back. Until once again it is the size of your body. And then a very small sphere of light at your heart. Allow your mind to simply relax into a state of awareness. Simply aware of this present moment. Accepting whatever arises, letting it be, and letting it go. You can use your breath as your anchor, breathing in this present moment of awareness. See if you can notice the balance between movement and stillness. The space within which thoughts feel. They are always changing. And awareness remains. Thank you. when you lose the present moment and you notice, then just simply, kindly, lovingly, come back to this moment.
I know. I know. We're both going to fall asleep. We're both like, why can't I fall over in front of me? That'll look weird. I can't fall over.
There is a teacher, a very well known teacher, that back in the late 70s was at a retreat when Mama Yeshe was teaching. He was well known then, and seated in the front row, and Lama was teaching, and you could see him. He was going like this. And he fell over backwards.
Oh no!
That's the ultimate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Falling asleep is. We have to catch ourselves when we first begin to see, get into that cozy space. Mm. You know, because there's a cozy, pleasant space that we just stay in until we fall asleep. So when we meditate, we need to have something, Tibetans call it nar. It's an energy. So there's you're really looking at the object. So if you're looking at your breath, you're really attending to your breath. It's like it's a very amazing thing to look at. So it's a childlike curiosity that we conjure up. Geshe Lama Khonshop used to say, you know, he had a cane, and he would say, it's not like this, it's like this. And it's not unrelaxed. You know, the difference between being totally focused, like really right there. It's like you have you're watching someone else's child, a 2-year-old on the beach, who likes to go in the water. You are not going to take your eyes off of that child. But it doesn't mean you have to be all tense about it, right? So it's being...
Because it's
kind of
not your child.
Well, there's some empathy for you.
Of course.
I was wondering why it is like not your child, and then I have the answer.
Well, because if it's not your child, you feel like you have more responsibility for it. If it's your child, you know exactly what that child's going to do and how far you can let it go before you have to chase it into the water. You know? Yeah. Yeah, you feel really seriously responsible for you're driving someone else's Ferrari.
Oh, dear goodness. Guys
understand that.
No.
Yeah, so they say, you know, if you are beginning to fall asleep, then take measures. So you open your eyes. You can open your eyes. That's one of the things to let more light in. It's very easy to fall asleep when your eyes are closed because that's what we do when we close our eyes is we fall asleep. So it's suggested that we always at least have some light. And if you can get used to meditating with your eyes open, it's excellent. It's hard when you're in a room filled with other people to meditate with your eyes open because there's more distraction because you see everything that's happening. But when you're alone, it's good to meditate with your eyes open. And you're looking at the in-between. That's what they call it. Tibetans say looking at the in-between. So you're not looking at an object. Your eyes are slightly unfocused and you're just looking at the in-between. You're looking at nothing but the object, whatever the object is in your meditation. So falling asleep is a very common. And if you are in a habit of falling asleep, you will maintain that habit of falling asleep. So it's really important when you begin meditating to break that habit. And even if it means, okay, I see myself, I'm tired, I'm falling asleep, I'm going to get up. And I'm going to have a sip of water, I'm going to put a cold washcloth on my face, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to keep my session short enough that I don't fall asleep. You know, some people have a tendency to really fall asleep every time they sit. And the idea then would be to begin to train yourself to sit for shorter sessions and really be aware, really awake and aware. 5 minutes. I can do that for 5 minutes. So it is a thing. That's a falling asleep thing. What about everybody else? Please.
And we have learned too that it's the different kinds of ways to meditate. You can stand up, you can walk.
Yes, that's right.
Because sometimes when it's late and I'm falling asleep, I prefer to stand up. I don't fall asleep.
That's right. Yeah. More difficult.
More difficult. Way farther from the floor.
Yes, that's true.
So as we meditate more and more, gradually we begin to see how feeble and transitory our thoughts and emotions are. Those ones that have bothered us perhaps for decades. And we see how it is that they small, when we focus on small problems, they become big problems. But in fact, just by sitting in quiet observation, then you begin to see, to recognize how it is that they are not so real, thoughts and emotions. They're not so real as we thought they were. They're not so solid. And in fact, they're wildly illogical. They come so rapidly, like, and in no particular order. And you begin to see in a very direct way how they are not real. And that within that space, they come and they go. And you see directly how it is that you see that space directly. You see directly how it is that these thoughts don't have any nature.
And there's a freedom in that. There's a freedom that comes through the power of ongoing observation, awareness. I was recently at my brother's house, and his son is a yoga instructor. And he was telling me how, you know, yoga is, how good yoga was, it was the union of the body and mind, and we just got into a discussion about what mind was and how oftentimes he was saying, really, people are really now doing yoga for exercise, not really thinking so much about the main purpose. The main purpose of yoga, the asanas were originally started developed in order to be able to meditate and to have a supple body so that you could sit for longer periods of time without being in pain. And at the same time, it's very, very helpful to do yoga, to be able to be supple, to do that. But without the right an understanding of why you even want to meditate, why do you want to do that? What's the purpose? What would you say was the purpose of meditating? You know, I said, so I'm going to go teach a class on meditation. He says, well, that's cool. Yeah, cool. So why? Why do we want to learn to meditate? Why do we meditate?
To keep ourselves from hearing you.
Why do you want to do that?
That you stop other thoughts that might be intruding,
and why is that a good thing?
Well, there's different views. So, some I've heard, and some I agree with more than others.
Mm-hmm.
So that you stop from wanting type of thing,
mm-hmm.
So that you don't worry about the past or the future, and you just stay with the present,
mm-hmm.
what you really have.
So, and the future, you are in the present, and so at some point in time, if we think about one of the things that the Buddha said is that you really have to take a look at where you are now and what you have now, and the fact that you have this precious human life right now, you have this, and you're going to lose it. And this is something that we rarely bring to mind. We rarely bring to mind the fact that we're going to lose. When we die, what we lose is not just our possessions and our friends and family, but what we lose is this precious human life, which has unbelievable potential that other realms don't have, and other beings within the human realm don't have. When you have the ability to, you've met the Dharma, you've met a path that will actually lead you out of suffering. This is like finding gold. It's unbelievable that you have this. But we don't focus on that so much. We don't really look at what we have as being that precious. So yes, I have a human life, okay, very good. But we don't really think about that. And that's one of the reasons why we need to do that, is so that we will sit, so that we will understand, so that we will come to the conclusion that what's happening, these thoughts, feelings, and emotions are not solid and real. And what that does for us, once we understand that, like you say, okay, I can be in the present, but the present might be really uncomfortable. Present might be a state of severe irritation. But you see, when you know that the thought that arose that caused you to be irritated is no more or less than a thought that arises that causes you to go hooray. You see? It has no
in the parking lot?
It sounds like it.
March.
Yeah, parking
lot. I mean, this is so important to understand that the reason why Lord Buddha said, okay, you need to understand what you have, that you're going to lose it, and what it's good for. What it's good for. To have the ability to understand the Dharma when we say, okay, so you're going to live a virtuous life so that you can be happy. Because that's the definition of virtue, is that which causes happiness now and in the future. So we look, this is what being in the present moment and understanding the empty nature of the thoughts that are coming allows us to make wise choices. Allows us to see that what's arising doesn't have, I don't have to grasp it. I don't have to write the story about it. I don't have to follow again and again and again that same, down that same road. Again and again and again.
Boy, we've had those conversations.
We do that. We do that. So by being present and by recognizing that really there is only this vast luminous awareness, and the one that we hold on to as being so important doesn't have any quality of its own. Very interesting. But in order to find that out, in order to determine that directly, in order to see directly that we do not exist the way we think we do, to have that experience, we have to be able to develop some concentration. You have to be able to follow first, to be able to be one-pointed, but also to be able to do analytical meditation. To follow, blah, 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 to do it like this without going this point, and then, oh, yeah. To be able to stay within, to be able to hold the, retrain the mind. And this is true when you're doing meditation. This is what the Lam Rim is designed to do. It's designed to get you to see emptiness directly. The Sutra Path is designed to let you see emptiness directly. And you do that by recognizing how precious this life is, by recognizing that you're going to lose it. And that gives you some indication that, well, I better do something to at least ensure that in the next life I'm going to have another opportunity to carry on in this teaching, in this path. But when you study karma, and you study the suffering of the six realms, you think, well, there's no guarantee. So I don't really want to think about having a nice life next time. But what I want to do is just get off the wheel entirely. And so not to have to take rebirth without choice. You see, bodhisattvas and buddhas take rebirth, but they do it with choice. They choose to come back. So, for us to recognize those are the four thoughts that turn the mind to practice, and that's what creates renunciation or definite emergence. When you come to that place where, as Lama Tsongkhapa says, day and night, a mind aspiring for liberation, then you have generated the determination to be free. So I don't know, We have to really believe that we, not only are we going to lose this, but that we really can use it. You see, there has to be some power of the mind to say, yes, I can do this. It's possible, and I can do this. And not only can I do it, but I will. I'm going to make a strong determination to do that. And when we do our practice, we often, I use myself as an example, say, okay, now in order to attain enlightenment, in order to liberate every living being from
then I'm going to engage in this practice. That's not really changing my mind if I say it like that. But if I really stop and think about how rare it is, how many people I know in my world who have not met the Dharma, have absolutely no interest in it. Even they're around me, and I talk a little bit about it, they don't ask questions about it. So I know a lot of people like that. And then I know people who have met the Dharma, who have a little bit of interest, but don't practice. And I know people who practice, like Lama used to say, like mushroom students. You know, they go to a teaching and they get all inspired and they really practice, like, and then. So important to carry on just a consistent, ongoing daily, every day a little bit. Even if it's just the bookend of getting up in the morning and saying, hallelujah, I didn't die during the night, I have this day to practice. May I be of benefit to others. And then when you go to sleep at night, say, I did a good job. I did this, this, and this, and you rejoice in that. So important to rejoice in our good deeds. And then these three things, well, I could have done better there. And so these I'd like to do better. So I'd like to refrain from that exaggerating talk or that judging mind or the one who didn't like. So thinking like that, then you're damping down the negative and you're encouraging the positive. And then you get more positive. Do more positive. So those two bookends, if you do that every day, you keep a thread of Dharma in your life. And you keep that thread. And if you consist a little bit, well, then that's very, very good. And if you can sit for at least half an hour a day, which includes saying some prayers, but sit quietly for 1.10 minutes. It seems like forever. Sometimes when you get started, it seems like forever. 10 minutes can be a really long time. But it's the only way you'll grow your mental muscle. You know, sometimes I'm really easygoing, you know, say, oh yeah, be easygoing, have a good time, enjoy your practice. But now, you know, I'm getting old. And I can't just say that with a good heart and say, be easygoing. You know, I tell you, I can say from experience that if you practice, you will change your world. You know, you'll change the way you live, you'll change the way you think, you'll change the way the people around you behave, because you'll change your life and you'll change your mind. And you'll see over a period of years, you'll see how the things that used to irritate you don't irritate you anymore. It's very interesting. There's a... really did need a hurry because I didn't play. No, I didn't. It was a very nice quote from Mingir Rinpoche on Buddhist happiness. And I don't think I can read it a couple of times. I don't think I can quote it. But basically, Google. He was saying
Google it.
What?
Google it. You could.
Rachel
is good
enough. No, we will not Google it. No. Basically, he was saying that Buddhist happiness is to be able to maintain a sense of deep peace through the fluctuations of outer and inner turmoil. Whatever's happening in your life, there is a sense of well-being that is consistent throughout the hills and valleys. And this is what happens. Somebody asked me, what did I gain from 3-year retreat? And I thought, you don't really notice what you gain. What you notice is what you lost. You notice that you don't have the reactions, that you don't have the grasping desire. You just don't over a period of years of practice in your life, you just don't have to have that next thing. It might look good, you know. It might be nice to have that shiny object. And maybe you could use it. But it doesn't, and you could use it, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't have it. Lama Yeshe used to say, enjoy as much as possible, dear, without grasping. Without thinking that this is the cause of my happiness. So it doesn't matter whether I lose it or somebody takes it. It doesn't break my heart. And this is, it doesn't mean that you be, what shall we say, loose with your possessions, you know, and not pay attention. You just, you begin to see what's important and what's not important in your life. So I think it's really critical. It's really critical to practice. And I think a lot of you do good practice. And I just, it's great. Do you agree with me? Yeah?
What about study?
Yeah. Study is good. Study like read a book. I mean, read a paragraph. Meditate. Just to study, you know, and read, go through the book, you know, you get to the other side and put that one down and there's this good one and it's got a lot of good information and you read that. But it's not the same as really letting it sink in and change your mind. So my view is that you have a book that you read, that you're studying, something that you're studying, and that you study it every day. Like what I do is I have I get my cup of tea because that's of course the most important thing in the morning is the cup of tea. Not really.
No.
But you have the cup of tea or the cup of coffee or whatever you have.
Yeah.
And you have your book. And so while you have your cup of tea, you read a passage in your book and then set it down. And as you get ready to do your meditation, one of the best ways to study is to read that little bit and then think, now how will I explain that to my teenage child or to some 12-year-old? How does that work? And how is that true in my life? And how could that be true in their life? And how would that benefit someone else? So it's by being able to explain it to someone else. And you teach, so... If, as you study, think, how would I teach that? How would I teach that? And that's a very powerful way to learn it. Yeah? Anybody else have some good input on that? On study, on practice?
Yeah, a lot of the study without practice is empty. It's empty, yeah.
Well, I should write that down.
It's wasting a gift. It's wasting something that is given to you. It's like walking with your bicycle on the side. You're not using the gift. You're not using what you have learned. If you don't practice it,
it's true. And also, when you study, you know, you're reading something. Some things really jump out at you, and you go, wow. So I suggest you write it down, like you have a book, and you just write down, and you write the book from whence it came, and the person who said it, and page number. Because when you're teaching it in the future, and you say, well, so-and-so, but I don't remember where I found that. I know I read that somewhere, but it really will help you. It helps you also to retain it. When you write it down, it helps you retain it. And then once you've learned it, you have to say it again, once a week or so. You got to come back to it. Otherwise, I've memorized several things, and so then I think I know them. And then I'll be sitting in front of a crowd of people, and I'll start to recite something, and come halfway through it. Oh, there's a hole. I guess I haven't said that one enough, so I have to leave that one behind. That's an embarrassing moment. Yeah, it is. The Dharma is just the truth. You know, it's the truth of how to be happy. Through the development of loving kindness, compassion, and understanding that things are empty, wisdom and compassion, these two wings that fly you to enlightenment, when you grow those and you explain them to other people, you know, they get it. Even the first time, there's a truth in it that rings true, because it can't really be refuted. If everybody's experience is that when they have a loving, kind, open heart, they're happier. They feel happy in the moment. When you have an open heart, it's a happy feeling. And when you have an I want, I want, I want, or I don't want, it's a constricted, less happy feeling. And it doesn't come by the by, this kind of open-heartedness. It has to be cultivated. And the way that we get a precious human life, do you know the causes for a precious human life? How we got here?
Did you say prayer?
Pure prayer.
Merit. Virtuous actions, merit.
Which one was it? Precious
actions?
Virtuous
actions. Well, so it's, it's they say it's by pure prayer and morality and the rest. So the six perfections. So it is through the six perfections. We start with generosity.
Ethics.
Patience. Joyful effort.
Meditation.
Or concentration, meditation, and?
Wisdom.
Okay, so through cultivating those, and through pure prayer, you got here. So then we look.
Okay, I got really confused right now.
Okay.
How can we do those in the past lives if we were not human?
Well, I think
or
we were.
It has to happen once at least, no?
I know,
you can
but
start
you
going
know what?
Just my mind is start going well.
I know. But there's a complementary attitude there. They say Lord Buddha taught many things, right? Many things. And sometimes they appeared to be contradictory. But if you have someone who's walking and they're blind and they're walking on a cliff, and you say, look, stay really close to the right-hand side, you know, close to the mountain, because there's a sheer drop-off on the left. And then there's someone who's headed the other way. And you say, stay really close to the left, because there's a sheer drop-off on the right. It's kind of like that. So I think, metaphorically speaking, I'm not saying this because any high lama has ever told me this, but I do believe that you can see people's previous lives through the power of this life, how this life is. And I think that through the power of... It doesn't make sense if it's pure prayer and pure morality that gets you a precious human life, and you need to have a precious human life in order to pray and know those six perfections and behave in those six perfections. So it's like being on the bodhisattva path. And they do say that if you reach a certain, let's see, what is it that causes you to never be born in the lower realm again? By having, maybe it's pure refuge. But it's not. Yeah, I was going to say maybe pure refuge. Yeah. So that would contradict the idea that I found this precious human life and found just this once, which is ever so hard to find and ever so valuable. I think it's very good for us to think how valuable it is, and it helps in that way. But to have this attitude, also knowing that. There's a continuum
And if we don't reach enlightenment in this lifetime, we don't know where we were in previous life, just how far, you know? So to have courage, practice, because, you know, you might have, you come to tip the scale, you know? You don't know where you are in the continuum. You don't know exactly. You know, some people meet the door and they are so hooked. They just hear. They hear one sentence and they just are just completely, oh, it's like coming home. And other people have to study and study and study and study until, you know, 2 or 3 years later they finally go, okay, I got it. So I think it is like that. It's practice and having I think we have to have that. We have to have that idea that we can do it. I really hate it when my Dharma sisters, brothers come up to me and we're talking and they're saying, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm just planting seeds in this lifetime. I go, yeah, well, that's what you're going to get is some seeds. You want to say, you know, I can and I will. Because then that gives you the courage to really do it. To really do it, to believe in yourself. Mama used to say that. You have to throw the self-pity mind out of this universe. The one that thinks that you can't do it. Because we have all the causes and conditions available to us. We just have to get over our own laziness. Because we think there's so many other important things to do. So easy to get distracted. Get out of your routine, and then it's really hard to get back into it. So we just have to take ourselves by the scruff of the neck and say, come on, girlfriend, sit yourself down. Because the more you practice, the more it becomes a habit to practice, and the more pleasurable it becomes. Because you feel like you're doing something worthwhile. You're not just slogging away. You're doing something really worthwhile. So you have to be your own cheerleader. When you sit down, just saying, good work. Really good. Make it short enough that you can do it with joy. And then continue every day. A little bit. I know you have some questions. Questions?
Isn't that where Sangha comes in, though, when you were... That's the third jewel. Without that, it's so hard to maintain.
Yes, it is.
The effort.
It is.
And the...
It is. And there's an accountability that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have a Sangha, like when you come here week after week, you know, you come and when you're falling off, you're falling off the cushion, then your Sangha helps you get back on the cushion. You cheerlead one another. It is true. It's really valuable to have good Dharma friends. Yeah? Do you want to take a 5-minute break? Please.
When you said pure prayer,
mm-hmm.
at pure refuge, what exactly does that look like?
It was pure prayer and pure morality, which, in other words, in order to be practicing the six perfections purely, it has to be on a base of emptiness. So it's not like giving, I'm practicing generosity, I'm going to give Heather this nice gift, and I hope she really likes it. And if she doesn't like it, I'm going to be really annoyed.
Pretty hard.
It's like knowing that it's so. I'm empty, she's empty, and the gift is empty. So it is like that. It's having a memory. And this is something that we have to train our minds to do. We have to train our minds to think about emptiness. Lamsa Rinpoche says, like driving down the road, merely labeled by the mind. In this car, merely labeled by the mind.
going to my appointment, merely labeled by my mind, you know, doing these kinds of exercises that help us to remember that. So that when we're captivated by either anger or attachment, if we say merely labeled by my mind on top of that, it loses its great power. Oh, this is merely labeled by my mind. Okay. So then you look at it more carefully. Say, okay, well, where is the goodness in that that I really need to have, that I really want? And we know that everything is changing moment by moment by moment by moment. And yet what we do is we concretize everything. We reify it. We fix it in a box. We get everything the way we want it. Putting everything, you know, bringing this in and that in, and we make it all perfect. You know? And then the kids come. So, we think we can change samsara. But it's terminally broken. So what we have to do is work on ourselves. And through the power of working on ourselves, then those around us begin to change as well. So, and that's really, in these times, these very difficult times in our world, it's easy to have a sense of despair. So we have to keep remembering that things are always changing, and that we work right here. We work right here. And then that has a ripple effect. And it's at each one of us is rippling out. It's loving kindness.
So it's your reaction? I mean, I struggle with, like, I feel like I do good. I try to live in the moment, and my profession is helping others. I mean, I do that. And then there's people in my life who just like to just, you know. And I react because I don't know what to do about it. And I try to go to that place where I, you know, like, whatever. And I'm like, I don't know how to control that, even though I work on myself. I don't know how to keep those things from affecting me.
So when someone else is angry, it affects you. Is this kind of what you're talking about? Somebody else's behavior is affecting you, or you are reacting to their behavior in a negative way?
Well,
if somebody's being hurtful.
If somebody's being hurt. I mean, I can give you an example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just lost my stepfather, and I broke up with the boyfriend and put my dog down all in a short time span. Mm. And the boyfriend is gone, and I don't want any contact, and it's severed and whatever, but he keeps coming into my world.
Mm-hmm.
And this may be not very nice, but I sent back a card he sent, and I said, I don't want this. I don't want this part of it. And he just broke through all the things I had blocked him from and said, oh, well, thank you so much for that heartfelt. I sent you a heartfelt card, and you sent it back. That just goes to show kind of person you are. And I thought, okay, what do you, you know, how do I ignore or just know that what's the good in that? Like, how do I see the good in that? Because I just don't know how to handle it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the hurt doesn't come from him. The hurt is in your own mind.
Right.
So how do we transform that? How do you transform that hurt? So coming from a standpoint of you feeling hurt, then think, oh, I feel hurt by this. So you label it. I accept, you know, I feel hurt by this. And, you know, he's hurt. He's also hurting. So it didn't work out. You know, the karma for the relationship finished. But both of us hurt. There is some hurt. So just being able to react with loving kindness from that standpoint, when someone is yelling at you or being rude to you or being mean to you, first of all, we've created the cause to experience every result. This is the law of karma. Nothing comes from nothing. So I created the cause to receive something that I'm labeling hurtful. So I created the cause for this. So in one way, you can say, oh, okay, I'm finishing that karma. Okay, I accept. I'm finishing the karma. I did a hurtful thing in the past, therefore I'm being hurt. But I'm finishing the karma because I'm not going to react in a way that would be hurtful. So as much as we can, again and again and again, not through getting involved in a relationship again with someone, but through loving kindness to the person. Again, it's, these are, we're not going to be in a relationship, but I appreciate your kind thoughts. Thank you so much. But you never want to respond in kind with something that's hurtful. Because if we always do what we've always done, we'll always get what we've always gotten. So we try.
It's a cycle.
Yeah. We try to break the cycle. Right. See, in the 7-point thought transformation, I mean, these are radical thoughts that they didn't even teach publicly. They never wrote it down for centuries because they're radical thinking. But it's like when someone whom I've helped does great harm to me, I will see them as my holy teacher and I will offer the victory to them and take the defeat upon myself. So this is radical thinking, but think about it. When somebody has harmed you, someone that you've helped, you know, let's say somebody that you've given money to and you've really helped them get a job and, you know, you've really helped this person and then they backstab you and they do something really hurtful to you. So what the idea that comes is anger. That's what usually arises, is anger and not liking that person. But if we turn that around and we are kind to that person, we can kind of pop the balloon of that negativity. And that relationship may never be one of super loving, you know, but it can be friendship, it can be kindness. So we never respond. If we respond to hurt with kindness, then that hurt kind of diminishes, right? It diminishes. You erase it. So you're burning up the karmic seed to have that kind of suffering in your life. When relationships break up, one is not faithful, then you see you're hurt because your partner wasn't faithful and you feel hurt, but in fact you created the cause to experience that in the past. You maybe not in this life that you can remember, but the law of karma says that we created the cause to experience every result. Now that sounds kind of harsh, but at the same time it's freeing because it gives us the choice not to behave in these ways that will produce suffering for us in the future. If we know that by yelling at that person, I'm going to be yelled at, then we might take a second step back and not do that. So this is why studying all of these mind training techniques, studying karma, studying how to behave, we can see, honestly, we can see just like this, when negative thought arises in the mind, if we do the opposite, if right now we can do the opposite through the power of thinking about impermanence, for one, hey, I'm going to die, and it could be today. Do I want to have this angry mind? No, don't want that. Really don't want that. So now what will I do to get out of this state of mind? I don't want that mind. So you can even do it faking. It's faking. It's all play acting, right? Because it's all an activity. So you turn it around by doing something else. Doing tonglen. You know, taking on their anger. I take it and I give you love. I take it and I give you love. So this is what studying does for us. It gives us many, many tools in our tool belt to pull out at times of need, so that we can then not respond and not be caught in that whirlwind. You see a small problem, oh, yes, I got a card. I don't want to get cards, but I got a card. But then we make it a big problem. We add on. And then we don't feel good about ourselves either. You know, whenever I do something to show them how strongly I feel about this, Then I usually feel really bad about it because that was a heat of the moment kind of thing. And I didn't need to behave that way or even think like that. So in trying to, you know, what Sunil has been done in with nonviolent communication, really trying to communicate in a way that comes from a place of loving kindness and understanding that here's how I want to be treated. And therefore, I'm going to treat you this way. So, we try as much as we can do. Yeah. Please. Yeah.
So, you started by saying that where is the hurt coming from? Is it from that person? Or the hurt is in me? It is mine. You know? So, I created that hurt in some way. So, taking that responsibility.
Exactly.
Is that first thing.
Yes.
And then... And then you were saying that we can apply those tools like the Tonglen or the Lojong, or then you said NBC. So is it this? Now it is a question. Like all these tools that we apply, it will definitely give a result. Like immediately will give a result in some form. But ultimately, we have to actually have some knowledge or clear understanding of how our mind works, like just like how that hurt is in my mind, that relationship is also in my mind.
That's right.
And actually, that person is also in my mind.
That's right.
So that unless that clear understanding, 100% understanding, all these Lojong, NVC, Tonglen, it's just band-aids.
It is band-aids, but what it does is it does help to allow the skin to heal underneath.
Yeah, that's true.
And we do, through the power of these practices, we do begin to see, oh, you know, I turned that around, so that wasn't solid. You know, that was really empty. That came from my mind. So each time we do that, we strengthen our, what you, it's true. We do need first an intellectual understanding of how our mind is. Of the emptiness, that everything is empty, and then a direct experience. Yes.
You said earlier, we create the cause. Right? Is that, are you saying like straightforward? We create conditions to receive the hurt.
No, we create the cause. We plant the seed. We create the cause to experience it, and the condition is presented, and then the seed ripens. Okay. So let's see. So we've created the cause to be unfaithful. Then we see a person that we're attracted to. And because we planted that seed, the condition is now in front of us. And whether we're going to allow that seed to ripen or we're going to pluck it out as a weed, then there is free will. You see, I had a very strong... If you study karma, you think about it because everything has a cause. Everything has a cause. Everything has a cause. And you go deeply into that. At one point in time, I thought, well, wait a minute. If I'm forced by my karma to behave in every way that I'm behaving, then how do I make a change? How do I make a change? So when Kirti Senchab Rinpoche was at Vajrakani, he was teaching the Tantric Grounds and Paths. For 3 years he came because he really wanted to make that, get all of that information out. And so I was thinking very deeply about that. And so I asked him, and he said, you have free will. So there, you do, because I asked him, do we have free will? And he said, absolutely, you have free will. So there's the thought arising. And there's a moment before you decide to yell back. You know, the person yells, there's a moment where we can make change.
We have to notice the moment.
You have to notice the moment, yes.
That's why you need the
there
blank mind.
That's right.
You missed the moment, darn it.
Yeah.
I think that's why I practice, right? So just knowing any approach, NVC or whatever it is not enough. Like you want to sing, it's like having the bicycle, but if you don't practice, find something to practice with. I think when I practice and I invite grace to happen,
yes,
right, then it increases the chances that grace happens.
Yes.
And then something holds us, something
yes.
bigger than us.
Yes.
Because it's not like you know.
I sometimes think about your example. When you gave the example about your neighbor irritating you, you know, how
it's not over, it's still going on.
You still have karma.
That's life, right? You know, that's my, I'm growing so much through working with him and learning to connect with him as a human being. But I want to hear what you're saying, though.
Well, it's true. I think about that because, like you said, he's really your very best friend because he gives you this opportunity to practice.
Oh, gosh.
So when you have someone in your life like that who is, kind of constantly poking you, it gives you a real good chance to look.
Yes.
Lama Rinpoche said to me when he was having lunch one day, he said, you know, I can't practice. And I said, you can't practice? And he said, no. He said, because everybody is so nice to me. They always give me the very best food and the very best place to stay. And everybody always says nice words. He said, now your enemy, they're your very best friend.
Oh, God.
Because they give you a chance to practice. They show you where you aren't yet enlightened, you know? If everybody's treating you with, you know, like you're the queen or the king and everybody's kind and everybody's giving you everything, then you think, okay, you know, I really got it under control. And then they come up and they say, gosh, you're a lovely teacher. Oh. Then you see ego arising, you know? Because I want to be a lovely teacher. I want to be seen like. Then we say, oh, you want to be seen as something else. So I do think about, I love that example that your neighbor does this thing.
Oh, God.
See, I like what you were saying about the studying, because I was reading a book and it's taking me a long time. Because I do, I just read like a paragraph, and I have these intentions of reading way more, because it's so, you know, and then all of a sudden I get to something like, whoa, like I just throw the book down like that, and I just have to think about it. And,
yes.
And it basically has given me some tools, and one of them that really is sticking with me, and it's because I can't quite wrap my brain around it, is the only person that can reject us is ourselves. And so it's like whenever I feel like something's upset me that somebody said and I'm feeling the rejection, I'm like, but hang on, they can't reject me, it's only me. And I'm like, it's like thinking about what's beyond the universe. It starts me going down this path, and it's basically like the tools you're talking about. But it just, mm-hmm. like, well, no, because I'm assigning that power to them to reject me, and it's not a power that they own, it's mine. So it's just kind of like you said, turning and twisting it.
It is, it's beautiful. It's beautiful, and it's so... it's also growing our, I think, our neurons. You know, it's keeping our minds more fertile and using this think about things. When you're walking around, if you're thinking about Dharma instead of the next fun thing you're going to do, mm-hmm. if you start thinking about those kinds of issues and analyzing them and coming to some conclusions, and debating. You know, it's good to talk to friends about it and say, okay, have that kind of a discussion at dinner time. My partner, when he was raising his kids, I was so impressed when I had dinner at his house one night, because he had on the table what was called the dinner talk box. And so you could put anything in there that you wanted to talk about. It could be anything. And so every night they pulled something out of the dinner talk box. And then they had a conversation about it, whatever it was. That's so cool. Instead of having, you know, everybody's gathered around the TV set and having a TV dinner, but they sat around the table and they had the dinner talk box.
Mm-hmm.
So it's talking about these kinds of things. It could be with the people who are not Dharma practitioners to say, here's what I've been thinking about. What's your take on this? And it gets other people to think about it. And this is how you teach the Dharma to people who have not been inoculated.
Dharmalated.
Yeah. It is like that. It was recently in Israel. I was invited to teach at a center in Israel. And this, the teacher of this center has 150 students. And these students drive for 3 hours every Thursday to the center from Tel Aviv. They drive down to the desert to this center to study for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then they drive back to Tel Aviv late Sunday night to go to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, drive Thursday night, through a semester, like an 8-week semester, something like that. I was so impressed. They were so dedicated, these students. And out of these 150 students, 60 of them are going to do a 3-year retreat starting in 2021. And I think, wow, that's just amazing. Just amazing. So they had, I taught for a weekend, and then the following week, the night before we were to leave, the night we were leaving, we were catching a plane at midnight. So I was going to give a talk in Tel Aviv. So the teacher who invited me to come, she says, there are going to be a lot of people there. And I said, okay. She said, because, you know, my students will come, the 150 will come. She says, and then there'll be some more, you know, there'll be some more. I said, okay. So I decided to stay home that day, and Keith, my partner, went off with another student, and they went sailing on the Mediterranean. And I stayed home, trying to think about what I might say that night. And so actually, in that hall, there were 500 people.
A few more.
500 people in Tel Aviv. Never in my wildest dreams would I have thought that there would be that kind of interest. So people are hungry. They're hungry for answers. They're hungry for trying to understand why it is that we suffer. How do we create happiness? What is it that holds us back? So it's quite inspiring, and it's up to everybody here. Really, it's up to you to take it, learn it, study it, practice it, and pass it on. Because that's what will save the world, through love, through loving kindness, through understanding. Because things are empty of any inherent existence, we can create love in our world. We can create that around us. We don't have to yell at our neighbor.
He's not your neighbor, though.
Actually,
my neighbor.
It'd be better if I yell, because I'm more passive aggressive. It'd be actually a step towards help to actually speak to someone directly.
That's right. You're holding it in.
Great.
I heard recently, I was listening to this tape, and he said something to the effect that forgiveness is to stop trying to make it even, trying to get even. Just let it go. Because sometimes things aren't even. And we always try and even it up, you know, to try and get back stop trying to make it even.
Yeah. If we thought of in our life, if we went back step by step, year by year in our life, and we thought about the things that we did in our life as children, or teenagers, things that we said and did hurt other people, that it would be nice if we were forgiven.
Yeah.
So we say it is in forgiving that we're forgiven. Through the power of forgiving others, that we can forgive ourselves as well. There are a lot of things that to forgive ourselves for. That's really good to forgive.
For what you're saying right now, sometimes I wonder if letting go and forgiveness is the same thing. Or Sometimes you let it go.
I think
but
maybe
it's not forgiveness.
Is another step.
The extra step?
There's a little extra step in forgiveness. Because just letting
Oops.
It go.
Darn it.
Is that what I want to hear?
Can I have another answer, please?
Wait, you know what? I just read forgiveness. Sometimes being the person was just more an idiot. I like that one better. It's like, oh, there's no excuse for them. I just don't have to worry about them.
He's getting his own karma. He's getting his own dealing
well,
with his own pains, right?
It is true to think like that, but when you, it is true that they are creating a cause to experience that very result themselves. So rather than thinking, oh, well, they'll get what's coming to them, instead of, I'm sorry, it causes compassion to arise because you know the pain that you experience from being hurt by someone else, or the hurt, the feeling of hurt that arises when people treat you or belittle you in those ways. And so we know how that feels. And by having someone do that, they're creating the cause to experience that in their world, in their life. And it can allow compassion to arise. So that's what I mean by there is another step to that. Because it's not just letting it go and letting them get what's coming to them, but it's really about...
Well, that is not in their control either, isn't it? What if they're getting or not, they're not under our control.
No, it's not.
You can send, love and karma, love and kindness.
Yes.
Because that's how you know it feels good. It's good for them. But whatever they keep doing, it's on their own.
It is. You can't change what other people are going to do. Except what we're trying to do, our point is to change our own mind. Mm-hmm. Our point is to bring our mind to a step where we wouldn't even have to let it go. Where we would automatically have compassion. There would be no reaction in a negative way because automatically we would know. We would accept what had come as a result of previous actions. And we would also see the suffering condition that's being created as a result of it. And we really want that person to be happy. Mm-hmm. We want all beings to be happy because we also think in terms of interdependence. And this is really an important thing to think about. That without these beings, we wouldn't even exist. We wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for sentient beings. And it's also upon sentient beings that we become enlightened. Because we need sentient beings to practice patience and generosity. And we can't do that without sentient beings. So we need those in order to develop our own mind. We need sentient beings to push our buttons. So that we can then overcome.
A new approach. Thank you.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you. Well, you know, we work in a business. I work for Child Protective Services. So we see so much trauma and so much all the time. And, you know, I keep going back and you say karma. Like, I don't, are these women that are being beaten up daily in domestic violence, is that their karma? I don't like to think that way.
I know you don't like to think that way.
I know, but
I hate to think that way.
And how do you...
I hate to think that way. And then you see them go right back into it.
To the same thing.
They go right back into it, you know, because it's a pattern, because it's like this whole negative pattern.
But to say they caused it, it's hard for me to grasp.
I know.
Like, I don't know if you're causing somebody to beat them. I just can't.
Yeah.
It's not.
I don't think I did cause it from somebody to beat me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, so the karma could have come from another life.
Right.
But karma.
But you learn and until you're ready.
Did you know karma is about our karma? We cannot judge anybody else's karma.
Right, correct.
Say that again?
Our karma is our karma. You can't judge anybody else.
You can't change.
Teaching of karma is about knowing our karma.
Right.
I cannot know your karma.
Right.
Okay. So I cannot apply the teaching to judge other people.
Right. I do remember when I heard a teaching on karma. And there was someone who said, who was really annoyed, and said, are you telling me that the woman was raped? And she created the cause to experience the rape. And the teacher said, you know, I know, it's really hard to hear. It's very hard to hear. And the answer is yes. We all create the cause to experience whatever result is coming our way. So that, on the one hand, that's really terrible. But on the other hand, it's very, very powerful. Because now we can change the karmic seeds that we have planted. We can change those. We begin to stop these kinds of behaviors that create so
suffering in our world, and try to help other people do the same.
Just by becoming enlightened?
Yes, well, by knowing exactly what to say.
So, what you're saying, the instance of the rape, she may have done it in the previous, something in the previous life. So, how would she, what would she do to change her karma in this life if she doesn't remember what she did in the last life, just by becoming enlightened?
Well, also, how does she become enlightened? So the mind of an enlightened being is completely free of any kind of grasping. It's free of the ignorant hatred. It's free of hating the perpetrator. It's free of that, too. So it's not really thinking in terms of that particular behavior, that particular getting raped again and getting raped again. You know, it's more a matter of being able to see the mind, the kind of mind that would do that, right? The kind of mind that would do that, then not having that kind of mind. So it's purifying the mind to be a mind that would never do that kind of action. Have I lost you?
Yes.
Yeah,
I went from
the one to the other.
And
like,
yeah.
She didn't do anything, so how can she?
Yes. Well, she, yeah. Not in this life. I know you can't. You have to go beyond. There has to be, in order to understand karma, in order to believe in karma, you have to be able to believe in at least a past. You have to be able to think that it's possible that there's past and future lives. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense.
Isn't the idea that we learn more each time, each life that we go through, or does it kind of like not necessarily work that way?
Well, I'm told that it doesn't necessarily work that way. So, and that is why it's important to keep the thread. That is why it's important to continue on this cultivation of the positive and eliminating the negative. That's the point, is to completely to continue to do that, however deep your practice can go. But still, to keep that thread. Because they do say, you can fall through the power of negative seed ripening and getting angry, then you can burn up a lot of positive karma. Which is why it's important to dedicate the good energy to enlightenment. You know, if you think about it, I always used to think, oh, it's such woo-woo stuff. But if you think about it logically and realistically, you can see how it is that when you dedicate a good action toward enlightenment, it's like William James says, that to which you attend in the moment becomes your reality. So you are attending to enlightenment. This is what we're attending to. And so when you constantly are putting your good deeds into the highest yield account, then you're going to reap that high interest. So that's, I have to have some logic to the practices, and it does make sense to me. So I noodle it until I can come to a conclusion that makes sense to me. And everyone should do that, to come to a place like Buddha said, don't take what I say as truth. Cut it, rub it, burn it, check it. Lama used to say, if something doesn't quite make sense, or you can't quite grasp it, or you just can't accept it, put it on the shelf, and then come back and visit it later. But don't just throw it out and say, I don't believe that. But just say, well, I'm not getting that. You know, put it on the shelf, and then at some point in time, the pieces come together. And it is interesting, you'll have what I call a Dharma aha. Where you will go, okay, yeah, it is like that. And those are really fine moments, and those are moments to write down, because then you put it in the bank, because you remember that, oh, I had that realization. They are realizations. You may think, oh, realization, you know, only high lamas have realizations. But it's not like that. It's every time you have a deeper understanding of impermanence, of emptiness, of compassion, you're having a realization, because you're looking into your own mind and what's happening in your mind, and hence in your body. You know, you're in your body, you're in the present, and you're seeing what's happening, and it's like a wake up. This is what a Buddha is, fully awakened one. So we are awake in the moment. And enlightenment isn't an on and off switch. It grows like a seed. So it's like that. We can all do it. And we must. We must. Okay. I was late starting. I'm late finishing. So maybe we dedicate. And I want to point out your prayers. To not put them on the floor.
Oh, sorry.
Because prayers, these prayers are the seed of your enlightenment. So you want to take great care of them. And on the back, we'll close. We'll offer a mandala just in thanksgiving. In thanksgiving for having spent this time together. And then we'll dedicate. Let's chant it in English.
All is ground scented with perfume and covered with flowers adorned by Mount Meru. For world, sun, and moon, I imagine
people in your